and welcome back to Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. I'm Lisa Schmeiser, and with me as your co-host is Philip Michaels.
Hello. Thank you for extending that introduction so I could finish the drink of beverages that I was taking there.
You really didn't.
I was sipping.
All right. Do you need to take another sip?
I'm going to take many sips throughout the podcast. I encourage the readers to as well, or listeners.
Yeah.
It's an audio medium, not a visual one.
We'd encourage you to do a drinking game, except I'm told that a lot of people listen to podcasts on commutes, and I don't feel like that would be responsible.
No, it really wouldn't, unless you're on public transit, in which case, tragedy of the commons.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, today we're going to cover a children's movie that Philip Michaels watched. We're going to cover a trailer I refuse to see, and we are going to discuss the two trailers that dropped recently in the Marvelverse. We'll also discuss what Philip's been watching recently.
Yes, because I've been on a plane, which means I get to see movies released in living memory instead of my my usual tact of seeing movies released before both world wars.
Mm-hmm. All right, shall we get started, Philip?
Yeah, absolutely. So I recently took our offspring to see the Wreck-It Ralph sequel, Ralph Wrecks the Internet. I was a big fan of 2012's Wreck-It Ralph. Mm-hmm. You and I saw that together. Yep. We came home. We found out our cat had defecated on our daughter's...
Oh, God, that's right.
A charming memory that lives with me to this day. Apparently, you would put it down in a deep, dark place, and resuscitated it now. Yeah. Anyhow, I actually really enjoy Wreck-It Ralph, not just because I was an 80s kid who played a lot of video games, and so a lot of the jokes appealed to me. I actually think it's one of the modern Disney animated movies that has... It has a different theme other than there's a prophecy that someday there will be a child who comes along or
Ralph is the antithesis of the chosen one.
Yeah.
And I think what I liked about the first movie is his insistence that he has value merely for existing.
Exactly.
And that's something you don't see a lot of in Disney movies. In Disney movies, there's this implication that you have to be special somehow.
Yeah.
And Ralph is like, I am special, and I don't care if you don't see it, but I'm going to prove it to me.
I thought the original was really clever and really charming and really stood a lot of animation tropes on its ear.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the sequel?
Not so much. It's an enjoyable movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get too bent out of shape about it, because you go and you're entertained.
I think it's notable that our daughter hasn't mentioned it once.
No.
Since seeing it.
No, she really hasn't. And she is someone who, when she sees something that she really likes, talks about it over and over again.
She's still carrying on about Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2.
Yeah.
That should give you, and I'm not saying this is some sort of weird superhero preferences transmitted through DNA thing, because that's just ridiculous.
No.
But yeah, she's somebody who still talks about movies that she likes all the time. She hasn't said a word about Wreck-It Ralph since we left the theater.
No, you'd really have to prompt her to get anything on it.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem with the movie. The movie, does a lot of jokes aimed at the adults in the audience, I think, and a lot of cultural jokes and a lot of elbow in the ribs going, eh?
This is one of my problems with a lot of children's films.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a swinging pendulum, and no one has figured out how to make the pendulum just gently wobble, because a lot of the stuff that we grew up with was just unrepentant pap that adults had to suffer through.
Sure.
And as a result, when those people grew up, they thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool and funny and cute and subversive if we threw in jokes for the adults? And then, oh, it's witty. Except that then you get DreamWorks-type stuff like Shrek, which does not age well at all.
No. In fact, we recently watched Shrek, me and the daughter, again. Boy, I'm taking a lot of bullets lately for the family. And that holds up not at all.
Yeah.
I still like the scene where they... have that little musical display about the town that Shrek and Donkey watch, and it's the instructional video, and it's very much taking the piss out of a Disney theme park, which at the time Jeffrey Katzenberg wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that movie is just very aged like not fine wine. Yeah.
Well, this is the other thing is our daughter got an unfortunate obsession with the Hotel Transylvania movies this summer. And that's another one where it's basically Adam Sandler and his friends got together and made some money.
Yeah.
And it's funny for her at the time, but I guarantee you, you come back to those movies in a few years and it will just be like, hey, what? Why?
I really dislike the Hotel Transylvania series. I don't think we've discussed this on
You've taken so many bullets here.
On the podcast. The voice work on it is so terrible.
So I...
Because, again, it's Adam Sandler just doing the Count Chocula voice.
Yeah.
And not even, like, committing fully to the Count Chocula voice. Mm-hmm. Just, hey, I'm going... Hey, it's me. I'm a vampire. Hey.
Yeah. So my problem with the Hotel Transylvania movies is different, which is that they are ostensibly movies aimed at children, so they should be about the child, in, like the daughter, Mavis, and it should be, the first movie should, in theory, be about her breaking free of her overprotective dad and marrying the Andy Samberg slacker character. The second movie should be about her adjusting to civilian life and back and forth, right?
Right.
Every single one of those movies is centered on the adult experience of how parenthood is a real head trip.
Yeah.
And that strikes me as a breathtakingly selfish thing to do to a children's movie, because what you're basically doing is sending forth the message that you're always responsible for your parents' emotions, and your parents will never handle anything you do well, and it will be a huge, colossal headache. And I find it to be a breathtakingly selfish and dysfunctional approach. And, like, I don't care if Adam Sandler is having a real cats in the cradle moment with his kids or what. What I care about is the fact that he got license and money from a studio to make a series of films where it is basically daddy has his big baby feelings and you get to hear about every single one of them in real time.
So you didn't see the third one. Lady, I got some news for you.
Dude, I saw the second one four times in a row with that kid this summer.
But, well, in the third one, it's you know, the movie is about dad vampire wants to have some dating time.
Oh, God.
And, oh, I got to keep it from the daughter because she's cramping my dating style, which seems a heavy thing to lay on your 8-year-old. Well, who's in the theater.
And I want to point out the difference between this and the Despicable Me franchise is the idea behind the Despicable Me franchise is you get to see Gru grow as a person because he wants to be better for his kids. But the movie is not centered in, oh, my whiny evil villain feelings are hurt, and so now I have to have a musical number. Instead, it's basically, here's a challenge, I'm going to overcome it because being a parent means this much to me. And that's the kind of message that kids are going to want to hear, is that the adults in their life will always be motivated to do the right thing for the love and safety of the kid. Kids need to hear that, as opposed to, oh, God, my parents are a basket case again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a fundamental difference in the approach in the two movies, which I say because our daughter, for all that she's got good taste in some aspects of cinema, like other times she just reverts to type and it's just a week of suffering while we're going through the DreamWorks genre.
Yeah.
It's, oh, God.
So what we're saying in our review of Wreck-It Ralph, Ralph Rex the Internet, is that Hotel Transylvania 3 is not very good.
I guess so.
I'd also like to point out, if you haven't seen Ralph Rex the Internet, just go online, watch the scene with the Disney princesses. It's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
It's all
that's
you need.
That's what I keep hearing.
It's all you
everybody
need to
is
see.
That the Disney princess scene
it's
is the
good,
best.
And yeah, it's there's a lot of elbow in the ribs, and it? Disney princesses? There's a very funny joke about
Merida
from Brave, which I'm not going to spoil here.
You know, Brave is a movie that actually holds up on review.
Go on.
Well, you and I watched it.
We saw it in the theater, and we were both didn't like it.
We were both underwhelmed.
Yeah.
But I also wonder again how much of that was. We were also like in the thick of being sleep deprived with the kid, and we were closing on a house, and there was just a whole lot going on. But I remember thinking, wow, you can kind of tell that directorial control had been wrenched away from one person to another. There was a weird musical thing going on. But you watch it again, and there are just so many interesting ideas that they managed to execute on about 75% of the way. And that's not a bad batting average, especially, again, if you've suffered through 3 Despicable Me's and 3 Vampire Daddy Has Issue movies. I do find it interesting that in Brave, Meredith's entire relationship is with her sense of duty and her understanding of how she has to balance her perception of herself against the realities of the world she lives in. I think it's a good thing. It's similar to Mulan in one sense, because it is a woman rebelling against the strictures of her society, but it's very different in another sense, where Mulan is like, screw all you haters, I'm going to save China. And Meredith at the end is like, I'm going to have to marry one of these clowns one of these days, but that day is not here yet. And so I'm just going to float through and respect my mother and understand that she was also a person like me at one point, and then she had to become a person like her. And I liked that. I liked that grounding a whole lot.
Yeah.
I liked the comic background to it, too. I thought the voice work was very nice. I liked the ambiguity of the magic element in it, where it was neither explicitly good or explicitly bad. It was a tool to be picked up and put down, and it was the content of the character that made the magic good or bad. I liked that element a whole lot.
So what we're saying here is...
go see Meredith.
Go see Brave.
Yeah, go see Brave.
if your kid is clamoring, Dad, Mommy, Daddy, take me to...
DreamWorks movie.
Take me to Ralph Rex the Internet, or take me to Hotel Transylvania 3. Say, kid, have I got a treat for you?
Do I have a six-year-old movie for you?
It is 2012's Brave. Critically not well received at the time.
I know a bunch of you guys are probably like, look, this is Phil needs to ruin the movies, not Phil needs to run down every movie they now have to watch because of children. So let's move on.
There is one thing I want to, some kid adjacent thing.
Okay.
The trailer for Dumbo.
No.
No, we're
no.
talking about it.
No.
I had to
no.
sit through it. We're going to talk about
oh,
it.
Oh, no. No. No.
And
no.
You'll share my pain.
No.
Well, then you stick your fingers in your ear.
I can't. Okay. I can't stand Dumbo. Dumbo is one of those movies where, like, my grandparents thought it was a good idea to take me to see in the theater when I was tiny, when I was a little tiny girl.
Yeah.
And from the moment that poor sweet mother elephant gets ostracized and made fun of by her elephant peers for not having a baby on time. So you've got this mother elephant who suffers the pains of infertility. When she finally gets the much longed for child, everybody immediately mocks her because this child has enormous ears. Mama and Dumbo are relentlessly bullied. When she defends her child, she's thrown into elephant jail. There's a heartbreaking song. There's all sorts of hardship that happens to Dumbo. And at the end of the movie, he's only considered valuable because he makes money for the flipping circus. It is awful.
I
hate that. And the baby mind song sends me over the edge every time, where I can't speak for an hour afterwards because I'm crying too hard. And frankly, the idea of Tim Burton taking all of that and sticking in live action, Johnny Depp is probably playing an elephant somewhere in heavy makeup and eyeliner, and that is going to be dreadful to behold too. And I cannot even think about the dread possibility of watching elephants get, like, emotionally damaged in real time. I can't do it.
I will talk about the trailer in a moment, but since you brought up some thematic issues. So I was in a store today. Maybe it was a liquor store. Maybe it wasn't.
Let's stick our children to
But I, there I was buying my liquor in a store.
That might or might not have been a liquor store.
That might have not been a liquor store. And there was a hipster version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer playing.
Oh, that's another one.
But it gets to the point where it's, hey, Rudolph, come and join our reindeer games. And then the guy added a new verse where it's Rudolph going, oh, so I'm good enough to play in your games now. And before I wasn't. What's the deal with that? And the other reindeers then say, you've given us a lot to think about, and we need to really reevaluate our own lives. And there I was in the bourbon section of what may have been a liquor store, thinking, that's okay, hipster doofus, what you've done with this song here.
Yeah.
You've really put a new spin on it.
Yeah, the elf therapists are working overtime now with the reindeer. But,
exactly.
Well, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer upset me terribly as a child, too, because Rudolph's dad is a complete doorknob through it.
This is the animated special.
The animated Rankin-Bass special.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rudolph's dad is a complete doorknob about it. And they go, oh, cover up your nose, cover your shame, son.
Cover your shame, son.
And
go hang out with this weird elf that no one likes.
I know. Yeah. And so I watched that once or twice as a child, and I was so angry. I would end up running in circles around the living room while my parents were telling me to calm down. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, we'll just switch to The Grinch. And I believe... We may or may not have covered my issue with how poor Max is grievously mistreated in The Grinch.
I think this has been covered in previous episodes, but...
Or by anybody who's been around me for any length of time during the holiday season.
Exactly.
And it just... I can't handle when they are mean to animals for the sake of pulling children's emotional strings. It is horrible and it is awful.
But anyhow, I'd recommend going on your music search engine of choice and looking up Hipster Doofus's version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Okay, is Hipster Doofus the one P or two?
Two.
Is the P silent?
And a Y.
Okay.
And a Y, and I think there's an umlaut over Doofus.
Doofus. All right. But why don't you talk about... Oh, is the Tim Burton trailer... Does it have, like, Helena Bonham Carter in
no,
it?
No, but
it has... A crow singing a racist song.
The minute Danny DeVito shows up, you do not need to know that.
From the weirdest episode of It's Always Sunny Ever.
two things cued me into what kind of movie we were looking at here. Uh-huh. First off, Danny DeVito wanders in, and you're going, "Oh, I know what this is going to be." Uh-huh. And then up on the screen flashed from the imagination of Tim Burton, and
oh no.
18-year-old me who took a 19-year-old me who took a girl to see Edward Scissorhands on a date says, oh no, I know what the imagination of Tim Burton yields, and let me tell you, it is not a good date. Not a good date to be on. Yeah. And Colin Farrell is in it as, I think he's a circus hand.
Oh.
And he's your hero.
So, and you and I disagree a little bit on Colin Farrell.
We do.
Because I think that in certain roles, he is watchable.
I think he's very good in certain roles. You know what role that he is not good in? Anything in a children's movie that requires you to go, Colin Farrell is really good with kids. In movies like In Bruges, where he's twitchy and shoots people.
Or where he was the feckless father in Saving Mr. Banks.
He was very good in that.
Saving Mr. Banks,
Where he dies of consumption. That is the movie you want to see Colin Farrell in.
Basically, you want to see Colin Farrell come to a terrible end.
Exactly.
No, like, there's a list of actors in my head who should be nowhere near a children's movie, or if they're, like, in wholesome movies, I'm always thrown.
Yeah.
For example, when I saw Bend It Like Beckham and I saw Jonathan Rhys-Meyers as a women's soccer coach, like, I had a severe case of cognitive dissonance. Because it was coming right off of Velvet Goldmine, and I was like, what the fun? Did you do this on a bet? Was this court ordered? It was so weird. And again, there, you know, like, you're never going to want to see Angelina Jolie playing Mary Poppins, for example. Like, that's just not a thing.
Christopher Walken is...
Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. Come here, children. Sit on my lap and tell me what you want. I don't think you've been good this year.
Right, and you know, anybody who's listening, we will gladly take your suggestions for actors you sincerely hope never go anywhere near children's.
But anyhow, I would put Colin Farrell in that grouping. So and Dumbo is wearing clown makeup.
Don't describe the elephant. I can't take the elephant humiliation. I really can't.
And
no.
You just sit there and you go, this is not good. This is not. I'm no fan of the original. Well, again, you know, racist crows.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think every movie in the Disney catalog needs to be done as a live action movie.
I was going to say this speaks to a bigger question, which is, do you really need live action movies? I keep thinking about the failed Peter Pan's multiple that we've had.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons, there are a few reasons that Peter Pan fails as a live action movie. One of them is that the source material is really dark.
Yeah.
And no one really wants to examine the fact that you have what amounts to an immortal teenage boy killing off other children the minute they get too old.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing that happens. But the second thing is there are some subjects that are more palatable when animated than when done live action.
Well, we watched the live action Beauty and the Beast a while back, mm-hmm. and I don't think either of us really walked away impressed with that.
Our daughter didn't walk away impressed, and she was the target audience.
And she's the target audience.
Well, the problem is you've got the Beauty... So, this actually speaks to something we're going to talk about in the trailers, too. You're getting a sneak preview of a conversation here. Mm-hmm. But before...
Trailers about trailers, as it were.
But the problem with movie coverage in the media today is you get all these behind-the-scenes featurettes or features. And so if, before you see the movie, you see the picture of Dan Stevens wearing his goofy mocap suit and the tennis balls where his beast eyes are going to be, and all of that garbage, that is in the back of your head when you're watching the scene, and so it is impossible to get swept away with the magic of it all, because you're like, meh, it's the dude from Downton Abbey in a spandex onesie waltzing around, while Emma Watson has to wear a corset and pretend she's in love with that big gray goon. So that's part of it. The second thing is when he transforms back, he looks like somebody who should be asking for tacos of La Jolla. Like, it's... like, it's not a French aristocrat.
Be our guest. Have three rolled tacos with guac.
Yeah, you have to admit, like,
yeah, sure.
You half expect him to wear, like, one of those Mexican hemp surf hoodies.
And we have lots of different shell salsas
and a puka shell necklace looking for his Tom shoes. Sure. And, dude, the French Revolution's coming. I gotta catch some sweet waves. Mm. I mean, it's just, there's no good transformation scene. So, but yeah, I think there might be some movies in the Disney animated oeuvre that make it over to live action, and it's not a hideous mistake.
So they've done Cinderella, which we haven't seen, and they did The Jungle Book, which we haven't seen. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if any...
They have Mulan coming.
Mulan is coming. Well, that could actually work.
That could work. The trailer for... the trailer for one of the other movies just dropped. Oh, Lion King just dropped.
Oh.
Which I have no interest in.
I don't think that's going to work for me, because, again, confession, I don't think the source material is that good.
Yeah, that's part of it, too.
Is a thing.
We saw the live-action Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, God. Well, that was garbage. Yeah. But that's
you, because... Like, the thing is you were actually angry about that movie.
Well...
Because you also really love the original source material.
I'm sure we've mentioned this before. I used to have my annotated version of Lewis Carroll's books. And
you've been looking forward to reading those for years with Trix.
With the movie, they did the stupid, there's a prophecy that says a young girl will come to Wonderland and slay the Jabberwock. And you're all, what the Christ is this?
And they didn't even include the Jabberwocky poem.
I don't care enough to go back and watch that movie to see.
And the thing is Mia Wasikowska is a great actress. I've loved her in Tracks, and when I watched the Entreatment series on HBO, she's great in that.
And speaking of movies on planes, when I went on a trip to China, the sequel was on was being shown.
Yeah.
And it was one of those old planes that didn't have the screens in the back of the seat. Instead, everyone watches the same movie at once, and that one pops on, and I'm all, scuttle the plane into the Pacific rather than have me watch this movie.
I will be taken by pirates before I see this movie.
I will drive this plane to the Marianas Trench before I have to watch this movie.
I think the thing I'm kind of confused about with the Disney live-action movies is, was there really pent-up audience demand for this? Like, are we living in the timeline now where at the end of 2019 we're seeing the live-action trailer for the Aristocats?
We probably are, now that you've put it out there in the world. I blame 101 Dalmatians.
Oh, God.
And one of the books.
So the book is much more charming. The thing is, as you read the original 101 Dalmatians books, it's so charming. It's so charming. There's actually three dogs, so the division of labor is a little more equitable. And it's...
See, our daughter, because everything comes back to her, she is the sun around which we revolve now.
No, what's interesting, actually, the thing is, here's a thing for all of you who don't have children or have tiny children, like, once they go to school and they leave your sphere of orbit, they get exposed to so much pop culture, flotsam and jetsam, and it washes into your house, and then you are forced to reckon with things like the terrible novelization of the Disney live-action 101 Dalmatians
movie. I was about to say, this is the book I've been reading to our daughter, is not the original 101 Dalmatians.
Which is so charming!
No, this is the novelization that people wrote about the movie with, who was it, Jeff Daniels?
Yeah, I guess.
And and Meryl Streep, yeah. And who cares?
Like, what I really wish that Disney would do is, instead of doing live-action versions of cartoon movies, I want to see anime versions of all those terrible 1960s and 70s live-action movies they did. Mm. I want to see The Parent Trap done in the style of Akira.
The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes done by Studio Ghibli.
No, The Cat from Outer Space done by Studio Ghibli. Thank you very much.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I mean, if you're going to go, get weird. Or better yet, remake The Black Hole.
Yeah.
Remake The Black Hole, only make it good this time. Yeah,
make it good this time.
Like, or make it like David Cronenberg body horror, where you find out that all the robot drones are, in fact, like, lobotomized cyborgs. Like, that's one of the creepiest reveals. That's like one of the creepiest... a spoiler alert for a movie that's 30-odd years old.
And that we've already done a podcast on.
That's like one of the creepiest reveals in the movie, mm-hmm. is the fact that this dude has effectively, like, hijacked people's brain stems and turned them into... Like, make it weird and creepy.
Goofy.
Or, yeah, just, oh my god, like, oh my god, you know, The Black Hole would be an amazing Japanese-style anime.
It would be a very good movie if you remade it.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie now, sorry. Yeah,
but it's got potential.
Sorry, nerds.
Yeah.
But anyhow, live-action Dumbo.
Are we done with that?
Yeah, we are.
I'm rocking back and forth thinking about that
put a
terrible, heartbreaking song.
It is not good. Please don't go see it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You'll only encourage Tim Burton to do more.
I don't think Tim Burton needs more encouragement. I think he needs less.
Yes.
All right. So, speaking of things that do or don't need encouragement, let's talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So, thinking of things that need less and not more, it's an Infinity War.
Yeah. No, there have been two Marvel trailers that have dropped fairly recently. The first one was for Captain Marvel. So, I've read the Kelly Sue DeConnick run. In the comics, and it's fine. I like it. Well, I'm not a member of the Carol Corps, which is what the people who really love the comics call themselves.
This is all pops and whistles to me. Everything you have said for the past 20 seconds has been blah, 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 Ginger.
Look, I think Brie Larson's a fantastic actress.
She is.
I am very much looking forward to seeing how they shoehorn this into Marvel continuity as we've known it through 19 movies.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking forward to maybe not being creeped out by the way they've digitally de-aged Samuel L. Jackson.
Who has hair now?
I'm getting a little tired of people using Blockbuster as a shorthand for the 1990s and Days of Future Past. But
it's a trailer.
I'm an old person, so that's mm-hmm. fine. Am I going to go see the movie? I'm going to go see the movie.
Of course you are.
Well, look, I'm going to go see the movie for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm really curious to find out what they're going to do with this character and how they're going to use her to launch the next phase of the Marvel Universe.
Uh-huh.
And two, I'm going to go see it because I feel pretty strongly that since it's taken them 19 flipping movies to get around to having a woman lead one of them off, I need to help bolster ticket sales so that it doesn't take another 19 movies for a second female-led Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You know?
My only reaction to the trailer is, this is the weirdest sequel to The Room that I could possibly imagine. good on Brie Larson for diving into that subject matter again.
You know, Jude Law gets to make his money, and they're good for
him. Jude Law's in that?
We watched the trailer together, Philip, and he was right there, looking all...
I guess I am just... I see Jude Law, and my mind wanders.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm told he's one of our greatest actors by Sean Penn. A huffy Sean Penn.
Came over to our house, knocked on the door.
Philip, this trailer features Jude Law, one of our greatest actors. Yeah. I would like to remind you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think at this point, the way I look at the Marvel machine is it's just that it's a machine. It makes it has a process by which it makes the movies. They've got somebody who has a whiteboard that has everything meticulously plotted out, and you can see how they get the publicity going for this, and all your different constituencies that get excited about different franchises get excited about this stuff. So there we go. And then the second trailer we saw, which I was actually simultaneously irritated and underwhelmed by.
So much so that you prepared visual aids for me. Here I was having a restful weekend.
No, you weren't.
And all of a sudden, like, I'm being treated to a PowerPoint presentation.
No, it was a video essay, Philip.
Excuse me, sorry.
I understand those are popular on the YouTube now.
Yeah.
No, seriously, there are people who make a living now doing that, where they basically like do clip shows and like throw highfalutin theories on top of it, and they call them video essays. Mm-hmm. I think it's delightful. And no, the second one was Avengers Endgame, which is what we are apparently calling the latest Avengers movie.
You know, don't make me promises you can't keep, Marvel Studios. Don't tempt me with the word end to your little movie franchise.
This will be like the 20th.
And then like sneak that away at the last second when, yep, sorry, we've got a Squirrel Girl movie now.
Actually, no, wait, I believe that Captain Marvel's 20 and this is the 21st.
This will be the 21st.
Yeah.
And
there has been really an animated Squirrel Girl.
There's a Spider-Man movie coming out before the Avengers. So
is going to be some weird-ass timing.
Yeah, well, I don't plot them out, baby. I just report them.
So we watched the trailer for Avengers Endgame and then shrieked at Philip that he needed to come in because I needed an audience for my peak, mm-hmm. and made him watch it with me and then compose my video essay.
Which involves clips of Avengers Snappy Snapperson Snaps Away People.
Avengers Infinity War.
Infinity Stones.
Yeah, Infinity War. Because of Infinity
Avengers...
Stones.
You die.
So let's get to talking about the trailer for Avengers Endgame.
Sure.
Which is basically everyone is very sad. Everyone is very sad.
Everyone is sad because Hawkeye is back. Oh no, Hawkeye is back! Steve Rogers cries. No! Oh god, we live in a universe where we've killed off everyone and we have to bring back Hawkeye.
Oh. I think that was actually my favorite moment of watching the trailer with you, was the minute that they do the Ronin reveal. Uh-huh. You burst out laughing and it was wholly involuntary. It's just... And the thing is I could tell as they were editing and cutting the trailer, it's supposed to be like this moving moment where you've seen somebody do badass with a sword in the rain, and then he whips off his little Ronin helmet, and you're supposed to be like, oh, Hawkeye survived the snappening.
Whereas the actual reaction is, who is this kind gentleman with the sword? Oh, it's Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Oh.
You went even back further in time for your weapon of choice. Are you going to use a club in Avengers 5?
I would rather it was Hawkeye from MASH who showed up and was like waving a martini glass and making maudlin sentiments about the war. This Infinity War is a murder. Oh.
So I think, and I've put forth this thing on other podcasts, and I'm not sure I have or have not done it here.
Okay.
I think the tragedy of the Hawkeye character. Go ahead, get the laugh out.
I'm the tragedy of the Hawkeye character is when someone said, "Let's have Hawkeye in this movie."
So
I'm done.
You may or may not know that aesthetically and about 50% of the original Avengers approach was based on the Ultimates, as written by Mark Millar. And
I did not know that.
All right, so it was based in some small part on the Ultimates, both from team composition and aesthetic, in terms of what Tony Stark was like, and more crucially, in terms of the Hawkeye character and backstory. Because in the Ultimates, Hawkeye and Black Widow are, for the first two-thirds of the series run, very good friends. They're badass assassins. They wear a lot of leather. They're a strike team together. And more crucially, Hawkeye has a girlfriend and three kids. Over the course, again, I'm spoiling a comic book series that is now like 18 years old, so, you know, be mad at me, whatever. Anyway, over the course of the series, Hawkeye's family gets killed, and he basically goes off the reservation morally and mentally for the rest of his time in the Ultimates universe, okay? So when they launched the Avengers movie franchise, it was pretty evident that they bring in somebody like Jeremy Renner, who's very good at playing tough brutes. They bring him in to do this role. Unfortunately, around that time, Marvel Comics launched Hawkeye, where this guy was just kind of a hapless bobo who is really good at archery on the side. So you have all these comics fans who are like, oh, I love the new 21st century Hawkeye, who is, you know, kind of a dork and has a dog and knows sign language and is great with arrows and mentors women. And in the movies, you have this leather-wearing murder bot who is a brainwashed villain in the first movie, and then like Joss Whedon hands him a family in the second movie, and this is part two of the Hawkeye tragedy, I think Whedon confused backstory for character development. Because it's all, I gave Hawkeye a family, now you know things about him. No, we don't. We don't know anything more about him. We have no idea why he thought it was a good idea to have a family, or how it informs his work, or whether his family is cool with him running around killing murder bots the rest of the time. So, anyway, my point is this character has been pretty badly mishandled by the franchise, both, and he hasn't landed well with fans, because fans have a completely different conception of who Hawkeye should be. And the worst thing is, this trailer does not fix any of that problem.
No!
This trailer makes that problem worse. This trailer makes me not want to find out what happens to Hawkeye or how he feels about things.
Hey, fans, remember when we sent Wolverine to Japan to become a ninja?
Yeah, this is
pretty- Well, imagine that. Well, only if it's with someone you don't like.
Well, this is the thing, is no one has ever, no one has ever really called Marvel out for their unfortunate Orientalist fetishism of the 1980s either.
Yeah.
You know, and that was really awful and racist back then. So there's that. This trailer, again, Steve Rogers is crying, and Scarlett Johansson recaps Avengers 4 for everybody, 3, but it's 4 really because of Civil War, recaps the last Avengers movie because we haven't seen the memes on the internet all year about snapping fingers and people not feeling so good and dissolving,
mm-hmm.
and everyone is very sad about this. The world still looks to be in remarkably good shape for all that we've now lost 50% of it, and that presumably includes things like doctors and airline pilots and people who ship food around the world and other things.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you know, you've got a little bit of hey, everybody.
A little bit of light comedy with Ant-Man showing
up. Yeah, exactly. And there you go. But the video essay I basically made Phil watch was by screaming, "Look at this!" And then pulling up the movie.
Don't look away!
And then pulling up the movie.
I don't know if you've seen A Clockwork Orange with the little things that pry open the eyelids.
Yes, yes.
Let's just say that would have been an improvement over the rig that Lisa set up to make me watch.
Scenes from a Marriage.
Yeah.
But what I was saying is the I have my problems with the most recent Avengers movie, mostly because it's like 4 movies trying to be stuffed into one. But one of the things the Russo brothers got right was levity,
mm-hmm.
and the pacing. And again, at the end, they're like, oh, Scott Lang, it's all very funny, and ooh, it's your Deus Ex Machina, your Twister, like that. But no, you don't give us 2 minutes of everyone being sad, and then Clint Barton being ridiculous, and then pull in the fun.
No.
It doesn't fit. Also, I feel like it kind of squanders some of the appeal of the characters, period. Second of all, this trailer presents the whole Marvel universe. Oh, it's very sad now because we lost 50% of everybody and Tony Stark is going to suffocate in a spaceship and all that. And no, you know what? And this goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is thanks to the way movies are marketed and made now, we know there's going to be a Black Panther sequel. So he's coming back. We know there's a Spider-Man sequel. He's coming back. There are literally no stakes from the Avengers movie that we need to worry about.
So you actually saw Avengers Infinity
in the theaters.
Yeah. What was your impression when the snapping was going on and everyone was dissolving? Was there a moment where you said, "This is bullshit"?
Yes, there was, Philip.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you.
Yeah.
No, I gotta tell you, the minute I said, "Bullshit," is when they is when Black Panther dissolves.
Yeah.
Because again, I was like, they made so much money off of the first Black Panther movie, and it got such great reviews, and it got such great buzz, and it was such a game changer. There's no way anyone at Marvel is going to walk away from leaving that money on the table.
I am imagining Disney and Marvel executives sitting in the screening room mm-hmm. watching Black Panther dissolve, going, "Oh, wow, this is powerful stuff." And then watching a pile of money dissolve.
And that's when they...
Now, wait a minute here. Let's not be hasty.
Yeah.
Black Panther's coming back, right?
Look, so the thing is like, he does the snapping, and then useless Bucky dissolves first.
Yeah, and you're all right. Well, finally a happy ending in a Marvel movie.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. Is Useless Bucky dissolved? We all know how I feel about Bucky because I just keep calling Useless Bucky.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, this is interesting because, Steve Rogers broke up the Avengers for Bucky. So there's dramatic stakes here. It's all very sad if he dies, but he doesn't have a franchise. He doesn't carry a franchise. So, it's collateral damage. And, that's interesting. And then, Black Panther dissolves. And I was like, they're going to unroll this. They're going to undo it.
Yeah.
And then more and more people start dissolving, and people I don't care about, like, you know, Scarlet Witch and all that. And then Spider-Man. And again, we know he has more movies in the pipeline. And this is the problem with the way that industry movies are covered and fans are catered to these days. Is because you know this stuff is coming up, you watch these plot developments, and you're like, meh, why does it matter? Yeah. Why does it matter? And when I watched this latest Avengers trailer, I was like, why does it matter? They're going to be sad for a few minutes, and then they're going to try and fix things, because that's the whole point of this movie.
Well, the ultimate way to de-invest people from a movie...
Mm-hmm.
Death is the ultimate thing. Death, yeah. you don't come back from death. The only people that come back from death are Jesus.
And even then, movies have shied away from showing that.
Yeah, but and so when you literally say, yeah, they killed them, but they're back.
Yeah.
That is basically there's no jeopardy. There's no stakes. There's nothing in this movie
that
you need to trouble yourself about.
Look, and I enjoyed that movie. I enjoyed lots of parts of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot.
Any cameos you enjoyed in that movie?
I'm trying to think.
In Avengers?
Well, I like Idris Elba's scene at the beginning, but Elba dies, which makes me very sad.
Anyone else show up in Avengers?
Anyone at all?
Oh, my God. You know what?
I'm trying to feed you a cue!
You know what?
Good Christ! Do I have to send you a telegram?
Apparently you do. Although I will say, when I did see the third Avengers movie in the theater, and the minute Red Skull came out, I was the only one in the theater went, ooh! Because I was actually very excited to come home and tell you.
Well, Lisa, you see, the Russo brothers are really allies, and I like appearing in movies that they make. As opposed to false allies like Joss Whedon.
You've got
to
be careful what you say. You can't really accuse Joss Whedon of don't, you got to walk that back there.
Truth is the ultimate defense, Lisa. You see, in Sullivan versus New York Times, it was established that public figures have a higher standard for libel.
So what you're saying is that Joss Whedon can't come after our podcast for libel.
Very rarely. It would be not really in his best interest to do it. You see, other libel case law is very clear in this regard.
All right, so let's say the Russo brothers so far have a nice clean record. They're not on the record as saying terrible things or pretending to be feminist and then banging their actresses on the side. Whereas Joss Whedon's ex-wife was all over the internet with that stuff.
Exactly. You see, case law is very clear in this subject. I've taken several law courses.
Are you actually a lawyer?
No, but I play one on TV. I have some clips.
And you are also the guardian of the Soul Stone on The Horrible Planet of Vannevar.
I haven't really looked at my work in the Avengers movies. Honestly, I feel that they're crap for many of the reasons that you've outlined.
Oh my God. Although you did kickstart the career of Captain America, the first Avenger.
Well, that was a good movie.
Yeah. No, like I said, I have my problems with the most recent Avengers movie.
I was outside. Was someone here?
But your friend Red Skull was here. Progressive Red Skull came back. Yes.
Oh, good for him.
He also left us this subscription card for The Nation.
Oh, good for that. That's a good publication. We should read that.
I would rather give money to Mother Jones. Anyway, the other thing I'm really mad about with the trailer for Avengers 4 is it's made me defend Avengers 3 even more, where instead of focusing on the things I didn't like about it. But there we go. So, I'm trying to think if there's any other movies I've seen recently.
Yeah, is anything you've seen that you want to hep the audience to?
No, because since it's the holiday season, we've started moving into that.
Yeah.
And nobody needs to hear our opinions on holiday movies.
No, not until the next podcast.
Yeah. But since you've been doing some flying, what have you seen?
Well, let me describe to you what I've been calling Phil's woke weekend. And
Great. First I get mansplained about federal law by Progressive Red Skull, and now you're going to explain wokeness to me.
Yes, well, I was on a plane just the other day, and mm-hmm. I believe I did mention this on a previous podcast.
Yeah, you didn't know how that Battle of the Sexes ended.
I had been watching Battle of the Sexes, and then we had to land, so I never found out who won that big tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. Turns out it was Billie Jean King.
Oh, ooh.
And mm-hmm. so I watched the last half hour of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
The last half hour is not very good, I have to tell you.
Well, I don't really think tennis is one of those things you can watch.
It is not a cinematic sport. A bigger problem with it is that mm-hmm. the ending of that movie is a little too on the nose
mm.
in that you literally have scenes of Bobby Riggs' flunkies watching the game on TV, drinking their scotch in their leather-bound chairs.
Are they smacking the bottoms of the waitresses?
No, but there is a waitress who is standing in the background going, "Go, Billie Jean King!" And it is
awful. That's
literally all you need is the Western Union sound of to complete the movie being telegraphed. And a little bit too much of the ending of the movie as well. That's sexism done and dusted. No one was ever sexist again. And there is actually a very good part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She's beaten Bobby Riggs, Billie Jean King, and Emma Stone.
Emma Stone is the actress who plays Billie Jean King.
Who don't much care for. I didn't like her in La La Land.
Well, you hated La La Land in general.
But she does some very nice work here where she is overcome by the emotion of it all and goes off to the locker room to compose herself mm-hmm. and is about to re-enter, and she sees her husband, who she loves, but not in that way, and she sees her lover, who she loves, in that way. And really the duality of that is overpowering her, and the whole situation.
The fact that she's won one battle, but there's still more battles to be left.
Yes, and she's having to put on her public face, mm-hmm. and Alan Cummings, who plays the stylist for the women's tour, mm-hmm. sidles up to her and goes, "You know, one day we'll be free to love whoever we love." And I'm sitting there going, "Oh, thank you, time traveler from the future, saying that too-on-the-nose dialogue. Maybe warn us about the 2016 election while you're
or global warming,
from the future.
Or if he's really time traveling for gay civil rights, why isn't he busy telling people to stock up on condoms and maybe watch out for a little epidemic that's about to hit?
Yeah. So anyhow, that's
no. This is what gets me. I hate this when you get these socially conscious time travelers injected into period pieces, because it's always, "Oh, I have the wisdom of the smug screenwriter's modern perspective, and I'm going to lay it on your 1970s asses." And the thing that I hate about that is, no, you don't. You are a product of your time. You are living in your time. You may have landed on the truth, and you accidentally or on purpose, but you are not coming at it from the same perspective as the person who's writing something 30 to 40 years down the line.
I will say one thing to the credit of that movie mm-hmm. is they used Howard Cosell's actual commentary from that match. And the reason why that was a good decision uh-huh. is, boy, his commentary was really sexist.
Yeah.
And
I think it's important for people to understand the sexism in which we took as a regular milieu.
And if you had had an actual actor doing the actual lines, you would have gone, that's bullshit. But to have
it there and be like, no, this was normal. This was standard. Yeah.
And people didn't realize. And he was actually saying, "You know, if she grew out her hair a little and lost those glasses, you would think she'd be a leading lady in a movie." And your whole Tower Cosell, really, that's garbage, what you're saying.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the same thing where you watch movies from the 1980s now, and you're just like, holy cats, the stuff that was normalized or considered comedy it's unreal if you're describing it to somebody, and then you sit them down and go, "No, wait, you watch Revenge of the Nerds," and you're like, "Oh my god, there's a rape in that movie." Yeah,
there is actually a literal rape played for laughs.
I know, and it's seen as a romance. Yeah. It's horrifying. But you know, you sit down with people younger people, and they're like, "What the?" And you're like, "I know, this is what passed for normal." And so I think it's important to have the, again, and that's why the Alan Cumming thing is so wrong.
Yeah.
In terms of storytelling, because you can't, it lends a false note. Mm-hmm. And it also doesn't let people sit with the horror, or rather the attitudes of the time.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think that he would have been saying, one of these days we can love who we will. It would probably be something a little more along the lines of, one of these days we can have a conversation about this, mm-hmm. even. Or one of these days we'll be seen as human. I mean, it was only a few years out from the Stonewall riots.
Yeah.
People were still wrapping their brains around the radical idea that, you know, you didn't have to be compulsively heterosexual to be human.
So after watching that, I watched Ocean's 8.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Well, which I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed. Really fun movie.
Mm-hmm. So how does that fit into Woke Weekend?
Well, you know, it's ladies just doing ladies things. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a lot. I don't know if there was much of a backlash going, I don't know.
There really wasn't.
Yeah, there really wasn't. The only bits I really didn't like about Ocean's 8 involved James Corden. So, he shows up in you and you go, oh.
He has been my least favorite thing about everything since Gavin and Stacey.
This movie was going well, and now I've got that guy.
So I'm still excited to see it. I will note is, so I recently watched the entire She-Ra series on Netflix, the new reboot. And then once that was done, I sat down and watched one or two episodes of the 1980s series. And what you may or may not know is, when the character designs for the new She-Ra series, which is show run by Noelle Stevenson, came out, when the new character designs came out, several men on the internet had a problem with how these cartoons aimed at 7-year-old girls looked.
Yeah.
Because these men thought that the women who are, again, in cartoons aimed at women children, girl children, thought those girl cartoons should be sexier.
Yeah.
With bigger bosoms and smaller outfits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you had She-Ra coming out. There are still people on Twitter who are in a massive snit because some of the characters are a little thick, as they say on the internet. You know, some of them seem to be, you know, not distinctly gender binary, this, that, or the. Anyway, it's a really great series to watch for a lot of different storytelling reasons. The voice work is fantastic, but the one thing is, I found I could relax while watching that series because there wasn't a whole lot of that ambient sexism thing going on.
No.
There wasn't plot lines where it's the girl plus the five guys that she runs around with.
She didn't look like she needed to be strapped onto a boat exploring the Americas in
she was
the
not, 1500s. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's not the prow of a ship.
Yeah.
And then we watched a couple of the original ones, and a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, no.
The
She-Ra He-Man thing came out when
we were a little too old for it.
About 4 years after I was about 4 or 5 years removed from the target audience, but I just remember it all being. Well, that's a thing.
Well, it was funny because I watched the first one with the first two with our daughter, and at the end of it, she just had this look on her face of complete confusion, and she says, "I have no idea what's going on here. I have no idea what. I don't get any of this." And I thought it was, again, to get back to the little ambient sexism thing, like, literally no one is going to be flying to the old She-Ra movie going, "Someday you'll be able to battle without wearing a miniskirt." You know. So
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining Alan Cumming appearing in the children's cartoon guy. Someday!
Yeah, you'll be able to battle without wearing a miniskirt. No, it was interesting. But it's you know, you raise a good point with that the Battle of the Sexes about the risk that any movie that's trying to make a statement comes across with, "Aren't we woke?"
Yeah.
Or, "Aren't we pointing out how there are still battles to be fought?" Or things like that. Like, you really do a disservice, I think, to your audience.
Yeah.
And I think that you also in a way, you undercut the full and immersive horror of what it was like to live in that by that.
Yeah.
You know?
So anyhow, the only thing I didn't like about Ocean's 8, besides mm-hmm. James Corden,
yeah.
was they killed off poor Danny Ocean. I'm giving nothing away. It's uh-huh. revealed in the first 5 minutes of the movie that Danny Ocean is dead. No, you're making a face, but I'm going to tell you, yeah, you can have your female Ghostbusters. Fine. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Fine. Uh-huh. You can have a lady win a tennis match. Fine. It's all fiction.
Uh-huh.
Right?
No.
Yes.
No. She yes. did win it. She did win it.
No? Well, I don't acknowledge that. But Danny Ocean can't die.
I'm going to bring Progressive Red Skull back in to talk about. Bring Progressive Red Skull back so we can talk about women's sports.
Because I think
he'd be cool with it. I think Progressive Red Skull would have things to say about the way Serena Williams was treated this year during her professional career.
I think Serena Williams is one of the top athletes, but I too had a problem with Danny Ocean being murdered!
You're still a tool of the patriarchy. You're not as much of an ally as you think you are, Progressive Red Skull.
I acknowledge your call of my hypocrisy!
Oh my gosh. So, Phil, I'm bringing you back.
Okay. I was in another room. Is someone in here?
Are there any movies you're looking forward to watching?
You know, I'm in the middle of watching Local Hero from the 1980s, which I'm quite enjoying.
All right.
I mean, so much as one can enjoy a movie that one is watching in stages.
Yeah.
Just as the director intended to dip in and dip out.
There
so
you go.
I'm enjoying that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for sticking around with Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for listening to our assorted rants and raves. Feel free to reach out and contact us on Twitter. I'm at LSCHMEISER. He is Philip Michaels, much easier to spell.
I am also at LSCHMEISER on Twitter.
He has no interest in your feedback.
No,
obviously.
I don't really care.
I do. I'll listen. I'll add him in my replies.
And I will mute you.
That's going to be awkward for you.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, you don't mute the woman who does your laundry.
No, you really don't.
I know where you sleep.
You do.
In any event, this is
apparently
been
on the street, the way this conversation is going. What?
Yeah, speaking of which, it's time for you to get out the door. I'm Lisa Schmeiser.
It is true. I'm Philip Michaels.
And thank you for listening.
Good night. Big Dick Energy. Big Dick Energy.
I've just introduced Philip Michaels to the horrifying Pete Davidson-inspired meme of 2018. You're welcome, world.
Big Dick Energy.
Why does it have to be dicks that have energy?
I don't know.
Okay, let's see.